We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me as always over there in beautiful yet wintry Chicagoland, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm good. Define beautiful Chicagoland winter.
I have never been
what you think it's like here.
I have never been in Chicago for winter, so I honestly have no idea.
It's okay. It's a nice enough day. The sun's out a little bit. I can't fully complain. I was out and about. I went for a big long walk yesterday down to the lake. Ty, I'm trying to do my best here to take advantage.
I guess I envision it like in the Winter Wonderland song, where you build a snowman and name it Parson Brown, and it's just a jolly old time in the winter. Is it anything like that?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
Not to my knowledge. No. But the good thing for all of us, Ty, is we have a large football game to warm all of our hearts and minds and college football addiction tendencies, do we not?
It is. We've got a big one. It is the College Football Playoff National Championship game. It is played on Monday, January the 11th, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN. We will go through all the details of that game, break down it from like a thousand different directions, and eventually give our predictions. But before we go any further, don't forget to follow along. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. We're also on Twitch.tv/SolidVerbal, where we're doing some streaming stuff. We're on YouTube.com/TheSolidVerbal. We are planning to do a live watch-along stream. We have started to line up guests for that very endeavor. We would encourage you all to follow along on all of our social channels, on our website at SolidVerbal.com, and also through the newsletter, which you can access at the website. Just give us your email. We're not going to spam you, but
no,
we will notify you of what we're planning on doing for that stream. And before we go any further, verballers.com, if you want more info on all the cool Patreon stuff we're going to be doing this offseason, Dan, a lot to cover.
Yes.
A lot to cover.
I'm just grateful that we finally get a couple scrappy underdogs in this game, Ty, clawing their way up to the national stage, doing the gritty, hard, underappreciated work as a bunch of guys overlooked from day one.
Really like yeoman's work in the college football world.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know what? I'm going to reverse course and say it's one of those things that I kind of hate when people say, when people use like the, you know, the gritty gym rats, the guys putting in the extra work. Like, how do you think these guys got here? How do you think like a ninth grader becomes a five star just by showing up? Be like, guess I'm a five star. No, And it always bugs me during NCAA tournament time, and it bugs me now. Obviously, though, these are two teams who have built up rosters that are unlike basically 127 of 130 teams in college football. But all the same, I'm excited on the merits of this football game.
The merits of this football game are exciting. And yeah. I think the calculus of determining who is going to win this game is a lot different now than it was a week ago before we saw the Ohio State Clemson game. So we're going to get into all that
sure.
and much, much more. Just again, to keep you posted on what our schedule looks like now over the next week and beyond, we are going to be doing, obviously, this preview show today. We've got a UFO show on Friday, and then the next show that's going to come out will coincide with our schedule shift into the off-season mode that we typically have here. You can hear our reaction to this very championship game on Tuesday. I think we're planning to do it Tuesday morning, Dan. Is that
right?
That's still the plan. Tuesday, Thursday.
Starting we'll do the stream before and during on video, and then we will react early Tuesday morning.
Early Tuesday, and then the next show after that will be Thursday. We'll go Tuesday, Thursday, all throughout the offseason. Unless, again, you sign up at verballers.com and you get some access to bonus content. But that's at least the marching orders as of now.
Correct.
Why don't we do this thing, Dan?
Let's do it. Let's preview a large football game.
Let's do it one last time. Make some picks with me, Dan.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's set the setting here. So it's South Florida. I think is it outside of Miami? I know it's Miami Gardens, but certainly it's not within like the downtown Miami area. Somewhere Alabama has won at least a national championship. My guess is multiple because this is Nick Saban going for his sixth, I believe, with the Tide. And Ohio State playing in this game for the first time in 6 years since they defeated Oregon in the inaugural college football playoff title game.
That is correct.
That was in Texas, excuse me.
Yeah, as we said, 8 p.m. Eastern on Monday, January the 11th. It is Alabama as a 7.5-point favorite squaring off against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Your over-under is 75.5 points. Both teams come into this undefeated. Alabama 12-0. They played a couple more games. Ohio State 7-0 by virtue of that win over Clemson from a week ago.
Yeah.
Let me start here. You can't help but approach this game from the perspective of, can Ohio State win? Can they win? Overwhelmingly, that was the question that we had about some other opponents of Alabama, mm-hmm. about Texas A&M and Georgia and Florida and Notre Dame. I think for the sake of argument...
Well, maybe you did.
I did. Thank you. You're a jerk.
Yeah, I know.
In all of those discussions, I think we invented ways, maybe for the sake of conversation, some of them more sincere than others, invented mm-hmm. ways that we could at least have a discussion.
Sure.
We could at least imagine that possibility. I had a hard time with this question, in part because deep down, I always believed that Alabama was going to win, but I've always wanted someone to challenge them, right? For me, it's always been less about can so-and-so win and more about getting down to brass tacks of can they actually stop Alabama? Can they get a few stops? Can they turn them into points? We haven't been able to confidently say that about any team so far. And that's what brings us now to this very moment where we talk about Ohio State. I hate to frame it out in that
context.
Well,
by the way, we should mention there have been teams who have gotten stops and there have been teams who have been able to score points. But it's the whole both of those things, one after the other, that has been the issue this season. You know, Alabama gave up points to Ole Miss and to Florida. Those teams had issues getting stops. Georgia was able to get stops and carry a lead late into their midway through the third quarter. It was the generating points for four quarters that was the issue. So this is not a bulletproof Alabama team.
No.
But you got to bring the whole package to the table.
Yeah, and by the way, getting stops is relative too. Georgia got stops but gave up 41 points. Notre Dame got stops and held Alabama to season low 31 mm-hmm. a week ago. So it's all relative here. But I can't start a conversation about this game or any game Alabama's played all year without going there first? Can so-and-so stop Alabama? Now, that brings us to Ohio State. What's especially interesting to me about this matchup is that the Buckeyes did to Clemson exactly what Alabama has done to nearly everyone it faces. And that is, they got them in a hole and they whacked them. Every time they tried to crawl, they whacked them and they didn't let it happen. And that's how we saw the margin of victory a week ago. If Ohio State can do that to a team like Clemson, who's to say, Dan, who's to say that they can't go toe-to-toe with Bama? And I think that's why the line is right around 7. Vegas thinks it's a one-score game.
About 41-34, if my math.
Something like that.
Does me well. 41-34 add up to the over-under of 75-ish.
Yeah, so something
that's,
like
that's,
that.
That's the vision in the desert of how this game may go.
The mirage in the desert, if you will.
Yeah.
It's a 7-point game. It's a one-score game. And it's a shootout. That's why your over-under is, I think I saw it to record, 75.5 points in the national championship. So that's a lot to digest. We can start with, can Ohio State stop Alabama? We can start with, can Ohio State do to Bama what Bama does to everyone else? We can start wherever you want, Dan. But
well, I want to talk about what you should be eating in Miami if you're fortunate enough to be the... How many people are expected in the stands? About 3,000?
Yeah.
3,500, something like that? I have recommendations. Continue.
Let's go to that Cuban place that you and I went to when I had my first Cuban sandwich.
I mean, that Cuban place. There are many, many Cuban places. And to be fair, the Cuban sandwich is technically, I think some people consider it to be a Tampa thing, but you can certainly get really good Cuban sandwiches. I went to Versailles one of the recent times I was in Miami, and that was delicious. More of an old school place. You can do really, really well in Miami for your stomach. But yes, I digress.
What are your general thoughts on this matchup? Yeah. And where do you want to start our coverage of it?
The general thoughts are it's a fascinating matchup, both because we're talking about two high-level teams in terms of talent and recent results. Ohio State has been in the playoff even when they haven't scored points, even when, you know, they were that close last year against Clemson and couldn't pull it off, even when they looked fantastic, sneaking in as a 4 seed in 2014 and winning the 2015 title because it was early January and taking down Alabama and Oregon in the process. Ohio State, not an unfamiliar team here, though hasn't been in this game in a little bit. And Alabama, there's nothing too novel about Alabama other than the fact that they have largely arrived here because of their offense, which has been the case these past couple years. But the interesting thing to me, bigger picture, is do you know how many full seasons, and by full, I mean double-digit game seasons, Ryan Day has coached as a head coach? That'd be one.
Yeah, one.
That'd be one last year, right?
Beyond
so
this
they
year.
Go, yeah, they go 13-1 with the loss to Clemson in the college football playoff. And Nick Saban has coached many more than that. And typically, we're used to in this game seeing, you know, Dabo Sweeney had been there since, had been at Clemson since what, 2008, and he, you know, he takes nearly a decade to really truly break through and build a superpower to get to this game. Kirby Smart was in Athens for a few years. You know, Mark Helfrich at least had been there a couple years, and Mark D'Antonio there forever, and Brian Kelly at Notre Dame forever. And, you know, to get to this point, and surely obviously this is a Death Star largely constructed by Urban Meyer and the previous staff and the holdovers now on Ryan Day's staff. But impressive nonetheless to take a team in, you know, I think he's coached 24 games, something like that, and take them to this point against an all-timer in Nick Saban. So the element of, you know, you hear, you know, I remember Tom Brady talking about, you know, the first time you're in a Super Bowl, it's just getting used to the timing. And now certainly this year's timing with there not being media days and events surrounding, there's the hoopla is limited if completely non-existent surrounding this year's game.
Which, so, by the way, fine
yeah,
with that.
Not a bad thing. No,
totally fine with that.
And probably a good thing for a team like Ohio State with the first time head coach who is still probably getting his feet wet. Didn't show it last week. Feet seem soaked after the way Ohio State dispatched Clemson. So that's an interesting storyline to me. It's the, you know, acting like you've been there before when you haven't. And the experience on both of these staffs, less so with, you know, Sark called this game a few years ago when Lane Kiffin left right away, if you remember.
Right.
So it's his opportunity before he leaves for Texas. And you have like the cagey veterans on the Ohio State staff and guys like Larry Johnson, Greg Madison, who, by the way, has beaten Ohio State as a defensive coordinator in a national championship game, did so for Florida way back in 2006, I believe. So there's all sorts of nuggets around this game that are kind of fascinating, both on the roster and in the coaching rooms.
Why don't we start here? Because we could break this down, like I said, 1,000 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on each team with the ball.
Yeah.
Ohio State has the ball, what are we looking at? I'll throw one obvious one out there.
Please do.
Which Justin Fields are we going to get? Are we going to get a healthy Justin Fields? You know, he's got some thumb issues. He obviously got rocked by James Skalski on that targeting foul a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a few instances this year against Northwestern, against Indiana, where Fields was not the 6 touchdowns Justin Fields that we saw a week ago against Clemson, but something a lot more pedestrian. Even if you go back a year to that semifinal from 2019, Fields didn't have a bad game against Clemson by any stretch, but he felt he left a lot out there. He's going to need to be flawless in a game like this against Alabama if they want their offense to be firing on all cylinders. It's just, I think it's table stakes here. Everyone knows it's the case. Which Fields do we get, I think, is the most obvious question.
Yeah, I think we are tasking each other and ourselves with finding the King Hippo soft spots. If you remember Mike Tyson's punch out.
Right.
Like, you got, where is that moment where King Hippo opens his mouth and then you punch him in the stomach, if I'm getting my strategy straight here.
And then his pants fall down and you pop him in the mouth.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we are looking for King Hippo soft spots right now. And I think they are apparent. We don't have a ton in the way of Ohio State in the way that we do for Alabama, playing an all SEC schedule before Notre Dame. And Ohio State, a lot has been made of their more limited schedule, most of which was not their fault. and it's fascinating to watch because these are two teams where we're used to looking at them as being without or having very limited weakness. Whereas I think things, and a lot of it's probably due to the entirely strange and, if I may editorialize, awful year that was 2020, but I think the soft spots are definitely more pronounced. Now, whether or not either of these teams can take advantage for four quarters is to be seen, but that to me is fascinating because we haven't always had that obvious, well, here's where you get them.
Right.
Look at these past few national championship participants.
We haven't, and as I mentioned to you earlier, there are many aspects of this matchup that aren't too sophisticated to observe, to recognize, to call out, and to try and break down here. It's frankly a lot simpler than a lot of the games that we cover throughout the course of a week. So let me start here. Let's start with Ohio State with the ball.
Let's start with the ball. And the Justin Fields question is interesting. Continue.
The Justin Fields angle, I think, is probably where we need to start here. Ohio State's going to want to go fast. We know that's a game plan that's worked really well against Alabama in the past. Fields has to be dealing in order for this to work. If he's dealing, that makes the whole thing go. It makes Trey Sermon more dangerous. Like, there's so much that comes down to Justin Fields. Is he the most important player on the proverbial field here, Dan?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, with how beat up he looked at times after taking that hit, coming into the game. I don't know how much you know about thumb injuries and quarterbacks, Ty.
Not good.
It's not a great thing to have beat up, and certainly it didn't look like it affected him. And there are different stages and degrees of thumb injuries, acute and chronic and all sorts of things, but it affects accuracy, it affects spin, it affects just the strength pushing the ball downfield. It didn't affect him against Clemson in the way that you think it might because of his deep ball accuracy. He did miss a couple of balls, but you know, it looked like the best version of Justin Fields, especially given what he was playing through physically after taking that hit. But if he lands on that thumb early on in this game behind an offensive line that has allowed him to get hit, that's suddenly pretty different in terms of calculus. If he has to leave the game, we're talking about a ton of inexperience behind him. I think it's C.J. Stroud is the true freshman who saw some time. It's either C.J. Stroud or Jack Miller. But what does Ohio State look like if they have to run the ball with Trey Sermon, who has come on really, really well? But what does that game plan look like if they're not able to go downfield because of the strength or lack thereof from Justin Fields. It's fascinating to me. And if I were an Ohio State fan, I would lean on what he looked like in the second half making plays, but he wasn't fully the same after they exploded in that second quarter against Clemson. And if that's a big part of how you beat Alabama, which I believe it is, because I think their secondary is fine. I think their pass rush is fine, but there's nothing specifically. And I do really, really like Patrick Surtain. But the collective unit, both up front rushing the passer and the collective unit on that back end, I'm not quivering in my boots.
It's gettable, right?
It's
gettable. And to the point of Trey Sermon, so what you're referring to is Fields going down the field and making some big plays in the passing game. That only works against Alabama if he is the counterbalance or if Trey Sermon is the counterbalance. You need to have both things working at once. You talk about what Sermon's done over the last couple games. 60 carries in his last two games against Northwestern and Clemson, 524 yards, almost 9 yards per carry. If we get this version of Trey Sermon, like if this is the feature and not a bug, he's undeniably the best running back that Bama's faced all year. I mean, no disrespect to Kyren Williams and his 1,100 yards and 13 touchdowns, but Trey Sermon's better. Ohio State's rushing attack can be a huge weapon here, but it needs to have that secondary dynamic of the passing game. Otherwise, we see a lot what happened in the Notre Dame game. They start to get some movement on the ground, some push up front. Bama starts loading the box, forcing you to throw. Now, it's different when we're talking about Justin Fields, but if they can establish some amount of balance there and not rely solely on it, if Fields can get passes down the field, that makes this game, this matchup, very interesting to me. Like you said, the Bama defense, it's very good. It's very solid.
Yeah.
They're not like gangbusters back there on defense the way they've been in the past. They got a lot of solid players.
Number five SP plus defense nationally.
They're very good. No. They're very good. Yes. Don't get me wrong.
They're very, very, very good.
They're very good. I don't feel like they're as good a defense as we've seen in the past. And I don't think it's a fluke that we've seen teams like Notre Dame have some success on the ground. Bama was able to shut that down because they keyed on it and because Ian Book and Notre Dame's receivers couldn't do much. But that's not, I don't think, going to be the case for Ohio State.
Obviously, look, Stetson Bennett made plays for a stretch of the game against Alabama.
For a stretch.
And he's
stretch.
No longer even the starting quarterback of his team.
For a stretch. But I guess my point is, if you've got both things working in sync, this is a different matchup than we thought 2 weeks ago. Because Justin Fields has Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson out wide, two really good receivers. They've found a way to get guys like Jeremy Ruckert involved at tight end, especially down in the red zone.
McFarrell,
This is a multi-pronged offense. They need to have both Fields and Sermon working together. I think an early observation is if you see one or the other bottled up, that spells trouble for Ohio State.
If they're made to be one-dimensional, which means that we are essentially saying, even though Justin Fields is the most important name, the most important group in this game potentially is the Ohio State offensive
line. I would agree with that. Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, it's in terms of protecting him. And listen, this is a Justin Fields who is maybe the most talented player in terms of buying time for himself in the backfield. The athleticism and the arm strength and the vision downfield and the ability to make plays off platform are tremendous. But if Trey Sermon's going off, if the lanes are opening up the way they did against Clemson, I think Alabama's front is better than Clemson's. If that's opening up and we have Alabama eyes in the Ohio State backfield for play action, we are talking about the very ceiling and best of the best of Ohio State's offense, which is unstoppable. It's unstoppable. If you have to pay attention to Trey Sermon because he is rushing for nearly 200 yards like he did against Clemson, you're going to have to bring up safety help. And that is when things get pretty hairy if you're trying to stay with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave as strong a duo, a wide receiver duo with Jalen Waddle out, we'll get to it, as there is in the country when both of those guys are on the field. And so the offensive line for Ohio State is the make or break unit, and I think to both of us in this game.
I think that's right. And I also think that's a perfect segue into talking about Alabama on offense and their own offensive line.
Sure. Clemson, perhaps the best unit in the country.
Right. Clemson was a different ball of wax a week ago when they squared off against Ohio State. We talked about their issues up front. Bama doesn't have those issues. Bama has the best offensive line in the country. And for them, everything starts up front. They've been very good at protecting Mac Jones, at opening holes for Najee Harris when he chooses to run and not fly. And that,
oh man,
that puts an opponent to a choice. It really does. Yeah. You can drop a bunch of guys in coverage, and then they're going to gash you up the middle. Or you can stack the box, and then they're going to pop you over the top with Devontae Smith or you know, John Metchie, Jalen Waddle, who knows?
Right.
You have to find a way to get pressure without blitzing. It's harder to do that against Alabama than any other team in the country. And I think it's harder for this Ohio State team to do it than just a year ago, because again, while very good up front, they don't have the pass rush they did a year ago, Dan.
They don't have the pass rushing specialists, or not specialists, but they don't have the pass rusher who will blind you in the way, you know, the Bosa brothers or Sam Hubbard, Tyquan Lewis, certainly Chase Young last year. They've had this long string of special type dudes that you have to account for, gravitational dudes up front. There's talent there for sure. And what Larry Johnson did with this unit ahead of the Oregon game, it still keeps me up nights, how good they were. Both the Oregon offensive line was not this year's Alabama offensive line, but they were all over the field. The linebackers were all over the field. You couldn't do anything against them laterally. And I would be pretty scared if I were, I mean, you shouldn't be that scared if you're an Alabama fan, but pretty scared given the level of coaching up front between Greg Madison and Larry Johnson. These are just guys who have succeeded constantly up front. So I understand the trepidation if you're an Ohio State fan, given, you know, you're blitzing more often than you ever did, and it's a new full-time defensive coordinator in Kerry Coombs with Jeff Hafley leaving. There's a lot of newer pieces. Kevin Wilson has been in this spot, by the way, on the other side of the ball. He was there for Oklahoma as the offensive coordinator way back when. Not a great performance from him. But I digress. What Ohio State is able to do against Najee Harris and what they are or are not able to do in forcing third and longs is going to be enormous. What Ohio State's defensive strategy is going to be, because we've seen teams, Ty, all year long, try everything against this Alabama offense. What did we saw Arkansas? Like, I think Barry Odom dropped back three dudes deep the whole game.
He was playing coverage the entire game.
And all in all, they did all right in terms of limiting those big plays, which have been so killer in favor of Alabama. They still lost 52-3.
They lost 52-3, but they held Alabama to around 200 yards passing. So give or take, which poison are you picking here? And that's the problem with Bama. That's the problem. You got to pick what's going to kill you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you read Bruce Feldman's article, according to The Athletic, some defensive coordinators say the move is to just let Najee Harris kill you. At least you don't get burnt by the big explosion plays over the top. We'll take the running game and we'll press our luck. I don't see an obvious answer from the Ohio State side to Bama's passing attack. I don't know if anybody has that obvious answer, frankly, because they're so good. But Ohio State is somewhat vulnerable in pass coverage. They don't generate enough pressure up front. They're good, but they don't generate enough pressure to make me confident that they can really change the game in the trenches. And they are prone to giving up that big play.
I don't know if I like Ohio State's secondary that much. I know Sean Wade is interesting and he came back. I don't love their ability to tackle in the open field. I don't love Alabama's either, by the way. But there's something potentially really leaky. And Alabama, despite the highlights, they're not necessarily bombing the ball downfield all the time. I think I looked at your air yard stat. They're setting their players up to have the ball in space, and they turn shorter passes into longer gains. But this is not Mac Jones just destroying teams downfield all game long. He does it, but they slowly leak teams. They slowly, I don't know what the disgusting visual I'm trying to paint here is, but you don't need to be scared constantly that Alabama is going to throw the ball 47 yards in the air. It's just a matter of, keeping the ball out of Devontae Smith and perhaps Jaylen Waddle, who started practicing this week after his injury against Tennessee early. It's just keeping the ball out of their hands, period.
Well,
no
and
matter
that's,
how quickly or eventually.
That's the Sark game plan. It's the same game plan we saw against Notre Dame. We've seen it against other teams. He's not necessarily interested in bombing the ball. He's interested in giving the ball to his best players. And he's been very good at just finding ways to get him the ball. Low percentage throws for Mac Jones. Get him the ball. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Don't beat yourself. Bam is good at not doing that. And frankly, he knows the offense. Mac Jones is so good because he knows the offense. He knows where to go. He knows how to get the ball in the hands of those Bama playmakers. And that's what they do. It's not a sophisticated offense. They've got a really good offensive line. They've got incredible skill talent. And they just find matchups.
I think it's pretty sophisticated. They do a they do all sorts of all sorts of interesting things. There's lots of wrinkles week to week.
Schematically speaking, yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
From a really high level, if we zoom out 30,000 feet, what they're trying to do is very simple.
Yeah.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Do we know if Jaylen Waddle's going to play?
He practiced. What he does next Monday night is obviously TBD. I would imagine if he looks good in practice, then he will at least be in for certain packages and be used strategically. I don't know if he's going to be full go. That's a lot to ask given his his injury. Was it a broken ankle against Tennessee?
Broken ankle back in October. Yeah.
Yeah, early on in Tennessee. So I'm curious. I'm curious to see what Alabama looks like, and I'm curious to see how much they do or don't lean on Najee Harris early. One of the fascinating thing to me about a matchup like this is, and we talked about this ahead of both of the games last week, is what do these teams look like early? Ohio State gave up two touchdowns within the first, 10 minutes of game time to Clemson? Not ideal. Not ideal ahead of Alabama, giving up points like that early. I think it was touchdown, punt, touchdown against Clemson early on. They went down 14-7 pretty quickly. And Alabama, as we can see, if you're giving them an early lead, it's pretty lethal. And the final score against Florida was not necessarily telling, even though Florida only lost by 6. Alabama was able to build that lead and play comfortably with that lead. Not that Florida didn't keep them on their toes, but Alabama was just in an ideal spot because of how quickly they can get out of the gate.
Just
I'm fascinated.
Get them in a hole. Get them in a hole. If they try to crawl, whack them. Don't let them out. That's what they do.
What are the so in a matchup like this, where Alabama's a team that basically never beats itself, and we've seen, I like to call it the crispy edges, you know, the margins, and we saw it with the Clemson onside kick that turned the tide, no pun intended, a few years ago in the national championship game. As the teams are going back and forth, they're going to be a series of little things, be it situational third and fourth downs, be it special teams. Whereas Alabama's special teams are pretty good. Ohio State's like their return teams, their punt and kick return teams, and their field goal unit. I mean, their ability to kick field goals isn't amazing. These are the little things that if we believe both of these teams are exceptional when playing their best, these are the things that are going to decide the game. And so what I look at is if these teams both start out scoring, if they're going back and forth, and we're talking like 17-14 after the first quarter, or you know, a little into the second quarter, what are the decisions of, especially Ryan Day, who has not been in this spot, what do those decisions look like on fourth and three from your own 47?
Hmm, right.
Like, are they a all gas, no breaks team, knowing that Alabama can string together a 93-yard drive in seven plays for six? Like, what is Ryan Day's personal, what are his coaching ethos going to be in this spot? Because we've seen, you know, I think, was it the Eagles? Was it the Doug Peterson Eagles Super Bowl winning team? I know these are mixed sports, essentially. But he went for it on every fourth and short anywhere near midfield. Because he knew going against, was it the Patriots that they beat?
Yep.
I'm looking for that from Ryan Day, where just leaving it all on the field. Not trying to play, oh, well, I'm going to trust my defense. Like, no, none of that. Absolutely no. None of that. That's what I'm fascinated to see from Ohio State with the ball. And similar for Alabama. When do they start leaning on Najee on the ground? When do they start taking pops? What are they using the screen game in an interesting way? That to me is fascinating, especially without Landon Dickerson. It didn't make a difference against Notre Dame necessarily, but that's the heartbeat of their offensive line. He's the one calling out what defenses are doing up front. He's looking at shifts, doing those. That's, you know, he's the captain of that offensive line. How does that affect things against an Ohio State front that is still really good?
Yeah, and on the Ohio State side, I'm back to my earlier point, very interested in how they balance the play calling, how much they put on Justin Fields. A lot will depend on his health. How much do they put on his arm? How much do they scheme for Trey Sermon, given that he's had an incredible run here the last two, three football games? How do they present a balanced attack that can keep Alabama on its toes? Again, a very good defense, but I think this combination of wide receivers is very interesting. Frankly, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, very good. Good, solid football players. I think
the best of Ohio State. Yeah. Oh, I think the best of Ohio State is going to be on display. Yeah. I just don't know if it's for 2.5 quarters or for four.
Well,
that to me is the interesting thing.
Yeah, but how they balance that to me is interesting. I think if they can play with tempo, that'll be an early tell that things
which
are
they
going.
Don't always do.
They don't always do, but can.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to want to hear against Alabama because that has been a successful formula in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If they can go out there and play with tempo, I think that's if they can play with tempo and get first downs, I think that's an early tell that things are going the way they want on offense. But again, can they maintain?
I'd like to see, on a similar note, what does Ohio State look like in terms of generating mismatches? We've seen it, you know, we saw it against Ole Miss. We saw it against Georgia, where, okay, are we going to get Christian Harris? Are we going to get Dylan Moses, who is good, but, you know, that was also referenced in the Bruce Feldman piece. And if you watch the Ole Miss game, a step slower. You know, he is a mismatch problem if you're getting him out in space. And what is Georgia was able to do, I think, with James Cook downfield for that long touchdown. What does Ohio State look like in terms of generating those mismatches, be it with the tight end, be it out of the slot? Are they able to find those? Are they going to hunt for them? Like they're Chris Paul in the playoffs, hunting just for that mismatch. What does Ohio State do in terms of turning a linebacker on a running back or a slot receiver into a 63-yard gain? That, to me, I think is going to be huge because we've seen that hurt Alabama some this year. Florida did a very nice job of that as well.
If you look at let me zoom out for a second.
Please.
Let's zoom out.
We're looking over Miami. You're looking live.
Thank you, Brent. We've got two coaches here who I think come at this from very different perspectives. Like you said, it would be what, number six for Nick Saban? He's a legend.
Yeah. Maybe the greatest with Alabama.
Six with Alabama. Right. Excuse me. Maybe the greatest college football coach of all time. on the other side, we've got Ryan Day, who's still cutting his teeth on this level of acclaim. Now, has had a lot of success at Ohio State, don't get me wrong, already.
Yeah.
But he's relatively new there. So it would be first for him, sixth just at Alabama for Nick Saban. What is the narrative for both these guys coming out of this thing? Is it for Saban cementing his legacy as the greatest of all time? Certainly the greatest Alabama coach of all time, winning, six national champ, whatever, for Alabama. Putting him in the conversation with the likes of Bear Bryant. And for Ryan Day, is it trying to establish his own legacy? Is it trying to follow in the footsteps of Urban Meyer? Is it a little bit of both? What are the narratives for these guys?
Nick Saban has already written his. I don't think there's anything that can happen in this game that will change what he actually is and what his place is in college football lore. He's already the guy. He is already, given how much harder it is to win now than it's ever been. I don't think Nick Saban can do anything either way. I suppose if they lose 70-3,
right,
that skews it a little, but I don't see that happening. Ryan Day has nothing to lose. This is Ryan Day's second year as a head coach. Now, he was put into an advantageous position given, he's an offensive coordinator, the continuity there, having the coaching staff he has. But all Ryan Day can do is help his case, really. Because if Ohio State loses this game 35-21, okay, it's the first time in this game. Like, certainly he might not have a quarterback ever again as good as Justin Fields, but he's got an incredibly bright future given where he has this Ohio State team, both on the field, on the recruiting trail. He has them operating. So I don't think this game specifically is going to meaningfully affect how we look at either one of these coaches, unless there's some sort of crazy cartoonish blowout, which I don't fully see happening. If it happens, it seems obvious the direction it'll happen because of Justin Fields' health, because of the lapses in Ohio State's defense this year. It seems like if there's going to be a blowout, it's going to be Alabama blowing Ohio State out eventually. If it's a crock potting, if it's an immediate, air frying sear, whatever cooking analogy you want to use, I just don't see it happening. I see it as a fun back and forth because Alabama has their own King Hippo soft spot. So
King Hippo soft spot.
Yeah, I both regret and am proud of myself for this analogy. Because it's giving people, I don't know King Hippo's backstory. I think he was on some sort of island nation. He was the king of an island nation of some kind.
I'll look up King Hippo.
Please do.
By the way, just for reference.
Yeah.
Bear Bryant won 6 titles, I believe, with Alabama. This would be Nick's sixth with Bama as well. Saban has another one from LSU from his previous regime.
But to be fair to Bear Bryant, it was winning one game. And Nick Saban, since 2014, has had to win 2 games to win a national championship and a conference championship on top of that. So I think the degree of difficulty has me leaning.
King Hippo from Hippo Island in the South Pacific, Dan.
There you go. Yeah. I have my backstory straight for punch-out opponents. No, I don't think appreciably there's anything that can be dramatically gained or lost from a result on Monday night.
No, I think I'm with you on that front. And certainly
from a coaching perspective, if Justin Fields can barely walk and comes out and just guts himself in the way that, say, Deshaun Watson did, if you remember when his pants ripped from taking that helicopter hit on the way to a win, I think that was a year that Deshaun Watson won. That to me is just like it's icing on the Justin Fields cake and his last, what we assume to be his last college game. There's huge stakes for the players, specific players. But coaching-wise, program-wise, like even if Ohio State loses comfortably, we're still looking at Ohio State as one of the absolute powers of the sport. So, no, nothing too terribly changes for me.
Word about the 40-minute mark here.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this game. I think many of the matchups are somewhat obvious. We know that Ohio State's got its work cut out on defense, given the Alabama passing attack and ground attack and offensive line. They're very good on offense. And we know that it's a different challenge for Alabama defensively, going up against the likes of a Fields and a Trey Sermon and 2 good wideouts out wide. Alabama, again, is favored by 7.5. Have you given thought to a prediction here?
Yeah, because we decided to record the show at 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern on Tuesday afternoon. I have been thinking about it. I am going to go with Ohio State covering here.
Okay.
And I know this goes against what I try to adhere to sometimes with just rolling with the team with the better shot of covering, but against good and even maybe average quarterbacks this year, Alabama has been a little bit too leaky on defense to make me feel good against the best quarterback they'll face this season. Now, I know he's hurt. That's what worries me. I will probably lean with going with the over here more confidently than going with Alabama covering this spread. But I think my belief in the sudden balance of Ohio State, the coaching staff in place, especially on defense up front for Ohio State, I think they're going to have their guys overperforming, overachieving. And now it's the Alabama incredible offensive line, but I still think they're going to make enough plays that this is going to be relatively close. I have Alabama winning by 4. I have it as 45-41.
45-41, man, that would be a hell of a game.
It'd be an amazing game.
Wow.
I think we're going to see an incredible performance from both of these quarterbacks. I think we're going to see a great performance from DeVonta Smith because I don't see who is stopping him in regard to the corners, in regard to any sort of coverages that Ohio State can roll out to try and stop Alabama unless they really go very, very safe like Arkansas did. But that just goes against how they've succeeded when they have. So, yeah, I see it as a back and forth. And that's why I ask you about the crispy edges, the nuggets. Because I think that's what the game comes down to. I think it's going to come down to an unfortunate fumble. I think it's going to come down to somebody getting pinned inside the 3 on a punt and that changing everything, or an onside kick, or a tipped pass that goes for 7, something like that, like a freak play.
Yeah.
And I tend to favor how prepared Alabama is with not making those mistakes, even though they did in that onside kick situation against Clemson. I think they're just... there's something so airtight about Alabama's preparation in these types of matchups, and where Ohio State has made mistakes this year. I don't know, was it 2 or 3 picks that Justin Fields threw against Indiana, and all the yards that Indiana threw for in that game? How well Northwestern played on defense especially against the pass, and Trey Sermon ran for 300 plus yards. There are too many King Hippo soft spots for Ohio State in this matchup. The softest of which is just, what does Justin Fields look like if he gets sacked on the third play? How does his body move and perform? There's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
So that's what worries me about Ohio State. I have more concerns about Ohio State than I do Alabama, because Nick Saban's on one sideline, and it's hard to not always give the edge to the sideline that includes Nick Saban.
I've got this one at 41-30. In favor of Alabama.
Who? Okay.
I want this game to be close. I want it to be tight. I think that would make for an awesome, awesome Monday night of football. And certainly after the year of football that we've all had to endure, a baller national championship will be a cool way to end it. I think we'll get a good game, but I think ultimately Alabama's the better team. One of the things that struck me, not just in the preview that I mentioned with Bruce over at The Athletic, but some of the other ones that I've been sampling here and there, folks are legitimately comparing this Alabama offense to the LSU offense that we saw a year ago, this offense that was unstoppable, and they're different. And of course, the names are different and the schemes are different as well. But that's not a comparison I had considered before. They are very, very good. It goes without saying on the offensive side of the ball. And this dilemma that they force teams into, either bringing all their guys up front to stop Najee or dropping them all back to stop Mack in the passing attack, it's so tough to find that balance in between. And sure, you're going to get stops, but over the course of 60 minutes, you're probably going to lose more than you win. And so I think it's that dynamic that we've seen all year. I think it's the fact that they don't shoot themselves in the foot. I think it's that over the course of 4 quarters that ultimately gives them enough padding to win this game and cover the point spread. It does strike me, though, as for a good chunk of the time being back and forth. But I think I'm with you on the standpoint just that I trust in Alabama more than I do Ohio State. And I'm not entirely sure what version of Justin Fields we're going to get. Justin Fields at his best is very good. He's like one of the best quarterbacks in the country, maybe like only behind Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what to make of what we saw a week ago. Six touchdowns, only six incompletions. Is he going to be healthy coming into this one? Details have been scant on that.
I hated to see stories like Justin Fields woke up feeling better than he thought he would. Like, but what does that mean? What does that actually mean?
Yeah,
he felt waking up the next day after barely making it to the sideline after, you know, throwing a touchdown pass, things like that.
Football's a violent sport.
Yeah.
That's the very nature of it. You're going to have injuries, but I would prefer it not be to Ohio State's best player. And I don't know what state he's in. I don't know what to make of that. So,
sure.
Look, we'll probably figure it out early. It's something we'll have to watch throughout the course of the game. Ultimately, I think there are more ways for Alabama to score points, more ways for them to win this football game. So I'm going 41-30 as my final. I think Alabama wins and covers.
Okay. So we sort of disagree, but not fully on the big thing.
The other dimension here that we need to mention, if only because it's been a weird season and we're still in the thick of this thing with the virus. I am looking at a report now that there are COVID-19 issues at Ohio State that have led to discussions about having to push back the national championship game to a later date. That's from
Is that late-breaking that you just noticed on Twitter?
That's we should have seen it before we hit record, but...
Oh, okay, that's fair. But maybe you just saw it now, but that's okay. We mentioned it. It's worth noting.
We have to
note
that.
It's for sure worth noting.
We have to note that, and it's important.
The Ohio State offense, with and without Chris Olave, kind of different.
It's something that could invalidate this very preview. Hopefully it doesn't. But alas, it is something to keep an eye on as well. So provided, again, that there is a game on Monday, Dan and I are going to be doing some version of a watch-along out there on YouTube, on Twitch, on Periscope/Twitter. Maybe we'll see if we can get it on Facebook as well. All the hot spots, we want to do the watch-along. I think we're starting to draw plans with guests, right? We got guys coming on?
Correct. Oh, we definitely are.
Okay.
That's fascinating to me. If Ohio State, there was for conference games, is there a minimum threshold for the national championship roster numbers? You can look that up. Maybe this is something we should look up.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Is the ability to push back a national championship game because you don't have enough dudes to field a team? But the other team has done what it takes.
Of course.
Staffers and everybody surrounding the players have done what it takes. Obviously, it takes a village to get, you know, a team on the field in 2020.
Of course, the skeptics on Twitter are saying, well, it's not COVID. It's Justin Fields' ribs. That's the issue. I don't know if they're going to heal that quickly.
I don't know if broken ribs, which is just me making up the injury right now. Whatever the injury is that he sustained.
I've had broken ribs. They don't heal in five extra days, I can tell you.
Yeah, it's not going to do much. It's fascinating to me. I thought you were going to say the other element to this game is where you think people should eat.
Well, you tell me, where should people eat? First off, I don't know if people are going to this game because there's going to be a limited audience. It's obviously we're living through this and it's not going to be normal by any stretch, but... If you should happen upon this part of the contiguous United States, either this year or any other year, where should folks eat in this general quadrant?
For me, just for your pal Dan, you should try to get to Lucali, my absolute favorite pizza place that's in Brooklyn that has a location in Miami. Lucali is spectacular. And apparently it's much easier to get into in Miami than it is in Brooklyn. I really enjoyed Zach the Baker. It's either the Salty Donut or Salty Donuts. I would hang out in the Wynwood area. Some really great wall and street art, whatever. head to Little Havana, maybe get a cafecito, Ty.
What with a cafecito?
A little sweet espresso-esque shot of coffee in your life. There's a place called, if you like Greek or Turkish food, Mandolin. I think it's called The Mandolin or just Mandolin. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I don't spend a ton of time in Miami, but I've had some good meals down there. So that's what I would recommend. I'm trying to think if there's anything else off the top of my head. I would, man, Lucali is just, it's something else. I got dough babies in the fridge right now. And it's just.
Okay. I understand you've been communicating with Mama H, giving her recipes now.
I sent her the Detroit pan pizza recipe I used.
Okay.
It's undefeated. It really is good. And it'll get you to stop eating those cauliflower crust pizza, Ty. It's just awful.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Of course.
Write in solidverbal.
I wish we were there. I wish we were down there doing shows.
Yeah.
Doing a live show.
I was going to say write in solidverbal at gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, your prediction on the game, where we're right, where we're wrong. Yeah, I wish we were there too. And to build on the episode we did on New Year's Day where we went through our resolutions, hopefully next year we can actually go, regardless of who's in it, because it sucks. It's been a couple of years now since we've been able to go. And it is fun to be there, to feel the environment, to take part in some of those activities in the build up to a national championship. I missed that. Maybe this year more than ever. So
you had an annual trip to a strip club with Dennis Dodd that now it's just I don't know when it's going to happen again.
Yeah, it's
old Denny Dimes.
Bygone are the days.
I know. I hope we can do it at the next. I don't even know where it is next year, but unless it's somewhere cold, I hope we can make that trip next year.
It might be in Indianapolis next year.
Is that true? Isn't the NCAA tournament is entirely in Indianapolis
this year?
In a couple months, right?
Yeah, there it
2022
is. Miami, South Florida is 2021. Next year, it's at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. So maybe we won't go to that one. The following year is in LA.
I'll see you there.
At LA Stadium at Hollywood Park in Inglewood.
Yeah, I don't really care about going to the game. I'd much rather do a live stream with you during the game, but just to get out there for the festivities would be. That's, I mean, what did I promise? I promised the next time, let's see, the next time it's in LA, which is, what did you say, 2023? January 2023?
Yeah.
We will do a solid verbal taco crawl with any verballers who make the trip to LA or already are in Southern California. We're going to do a taco crawl.
Is there some sort of food crawl we can do in Indy?
I've heard Indianapolis is a pretty good food town. I just don't want to leave the cold if I'm still here to just go to another cold place.
Okay.
I'd rather make it count.
Dan is very precious. Need to keep him warm and insulated. And okay.
Get me out of Hoth. I'm trying to tell you.
All right. So look, if you are a Patreon subscriber, the final batch of Winter Wonders game picks will be coming your way. We have been going at this hot and heavy, all sorts of picks this bowl season from a million different directions. We've got a bunch coming your way. That's going to drop on Wednesday. We're recording this on Tuesday. So tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon, you will see hopefully another batch, the third batch of items that you need to pick.
For largely the game coming up.
Just for
weird
the game.
Props.
Yeah, just for the game coming up. Including perhaps a prop about whether or not it will be postponed, but we'll have to see.
Oh, interesting.
It could be postponed by the time we drop the contest, but we're gonna put some fun ones in there as we've been doing all along. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, we did send an email out to you earlier today, on Tuesday, talking about what we're doing this off season and how you might want to jump in and be part of the festivities. In the interim, Dan, we're going to keep working on getting our guest list together for next Monday. And have you decided if you're going to stream any Nintendo games? Are you doing that this week?
I have my controller.
You got
once
it?
Again.
Okay.
Here it is. It works on, I think I could probably play, because it has like the D-pad and everything. I could probably play N64, Super Nintendo, probably Genesis games.
Okay, cool.
And, well, the Genesis has the 3 and 3, right?
Yeah, right.
This is definitely a more Nintendo skewed. So it'll either be like N64, SNES, NES. But yeah, I'm setting up like a nice background, maybe a CRT TV to really sell at home. Nice design situation.
Okay. That's what you do.
I've started downloading games and I'm excited. Yes.
All right. Well, look, we wish you all well. We will be back on Friday to talk through some additional college football topics and much, much more. And then again,
will you promise me you eat something very good for this game?
Eat something very good.
Yeah. Like, I don't want you to be eating like, yeah, I had a trout crust pizza.
Trout crust. When have I ever?
I don't know. You
don't
and your
make
alternate
me sound
crusts.
Like super bougie here. I don't eat trout crust anything.
Trout isn't bougie. I'm saying like you use alt crusts.
Alt crusts.
Yeah. I want you to eat something good. I'm not saying you need to eat like a cheesesteak, but I don't want you to take an easy way out.
I will not take an easy way out.
Make a burger.
I will come up with
I think
something.
I'm going to make my taco dip, my chorizo dip.
Okay. All right. I will come up with something. You know this.
Please. By the way, also 2024 Houston. I'm there in a second.
Yeah.
Love Houston.
Well, let's make it through this, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Best of luck to both teams, to both fan bases, to all college football fandom out there watching this game on Monday. Let's hope for a good game. Let's hope for a fun stream as we do our watch along. Let's hope for a good show to close out the 2020-2021 football season.
Yeah. It's only taken us a year to get here. The season has been a very long time.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, thank you so, so very much for downloading, for listening, for supporting. We will talk to you all on Friday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.